This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, over here at the PTBN. And I am joined by my other co-host, who I think is also part of Place to Be Nation, Adam Murray.
Sometimes.
You're like the rogue. You're like the wild card.
I just float in and I float out. I have my one article a year. And
well, you know that, you know, the Nation, the Place to Be Nation, is kind of, it's sort of one of those, it's obviously one of those virtual communities, but it's sort of out, bred out of your area in the Rhode Island and, you know, upper northeast area, you know, because the, you know, the founding fathers per se were, you know, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo, who, to pull the curtain a little bit for everybody, is that, you know, Adam knew Justin growing up, right?
Oh, what a shocker! Oh, spoiler alert!
So you're in the so. Do you have any perks at Place to Be Nation? Do you get any free swag?
No, I get it. I get an NBA podcast with you.
So you're saying you got punished? But it's good to talk to you again. Super Bowl's over, so guess what that means? No more football. But we can talk about some basketball still, can we?
Sure, why not?
I mean, were you even that excited about the Super Bowl?
No, it was, nobody cared this year. There was no storyline. Oh, it's Cam versus Peyton. Yeah, nobody cared about either of them. Mm-hmm. The betting lines were just betted heavily. One, oh, the last day, oh, we're going to all bet Broncos just to be safe. And it really had no momentum going into it. And the NFL has sort of just, you know, they haven't done anything right in the last few years.
Oh man, that was really the main storyline behind it all, is that Roger Goodell is screwing this up and screwing that up, and he has so many questions to answer and blah blah blah. While he makes like what, $25 to $40 million salary based on all of his partnerships and all of his different licensing that he that the owners pay him back on, especially with that rotten move that they did where, you know, the Chargers are going to eventually leave for Los Angeles, and then the Rams have already done it, you know. Stan Kroenke, obviously, is with the Nuggets, so there's a little bit of an NBA connection there. I think we talked about that before, but, you know, I'm not that interested in to even discuss that. The only thing I was interested in with the Super Bowl is that it actually was played in the daytime for a little while. You know, the last time I remember seeing that was, I think, and you probably remember this, when the Saints played the Colts, which was also a Peyton Manning special. It was kind of in the daytime, I guess, to start off. You know, and well, then it sort of deviates into the nightfall after halftime.
Well, you could technically say it wasn't last year's in Arizona, which is also the West Coast. So
yeah, but that's retractable roof, so you don't really get that sense of it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, fine then.
It's cheating, you know.
You know, it's one of those outdoor venues. Okay, that's good. You know, here's your $1 billion arena. Have your Super Bowl, and then everyone will disappear a week later, and no one will.
Yeah,
you know, everyone forgets you had it, and then we wait for next year.
I was watching the highlights of, you know, because the one thing I do love about Super Bowl week is that I watch highlights of the Super Bowl's past, because I was a Super Bowl nutcase when it came to trivia and stuff. And when I watch clips of the Superdome, which is, you know, in the area where, you know, you and I had known forever, the funny thing about the Superdome is that the lighting is great, you know, unless Beyonce totally blows up the generator like she did for Super Bowl, what was that, 47. But the thing is, in the early ones, like when the Doomsday Defense beat the Broncos, and when the Niners destroyed the Broncos and Joe Montana threw all those touchdowns, it's so dark in the Superdome. Like, it's just so weird. Like, the lighting, I mean, I remember that too for Saints games, where it just didn't seem like there was a lot of lighting there.
Yeah, but don't forget, that was also the old school lighting before we got these fancy LEDs. And
yeah, and then now, and they're able to like compartmentalize the lighting so that it's directly above the field, you know?
Yeah, it's like watching NBA games now, and if you have like a Dunkin' Donuts ad in the on the up top, the court's pink now, and it's just like, okay. Mm-hmm. Little, you know, new lighting, new era. It's, you know, plus also the old footage, standard definition. Not the highest quality, so it's not going to be bright anyways.
Yeah. And to try to make a segue there, the lights are shining a little bit brighter with the NBA as we get ready for the All-Star game in Toronto, which is, you know, going to be interesting. If you listen to the starters or watch them on NBA TV, that's their safe haven. They're all of them except for ones from Canada. So they're going to have this whole week-long of festivities and all these different things. And, you know, NBA All-Star weekend is fun. And the other thing that's pretty cool about it is that it's an extended break for the players, so you kind of get to take a breath of fresh air. You get to kind of take it in. GMs and players can kind of sit back, look at their teams after a week break and say, okay, what do we really have here? But we still got a few days left of games to go before we get to there. Now, the lights weren't shining so brightly in Cleveland when they played the Boston Celtics. It wasn't even a nationally televised game, but pretty interesting ending there with Avery Bradley scooping up a game-winning corner three off of what a lot of people felt like was a sketchy call. Did you, being a Celtics fan, did you have any thoughts on that?
The whole game was, well, for one, Cleveland they were up like 15-2 in the beginning, and they should have easily won by like 30.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could say, oh well, and I'm just watching them, and it's just like they were just doing. There's something wrong with that team.
LeBron had a great game, you know, and it wasn't like, you know, I'm actually going to try to scoop up the box score right now here, but, you know, a couple of them had good games here. Like, I remember seeing a lot of Evan Turner for some reason. Marcus Smart made a really smart play. You saw what I did there to try to get that rebound, fight for it underneath the free throw line. Kevin Love was okay, even though he messed up his leg in that game and had to step out. Or was it in that game? Yeah, you know who it was?
Yeah, that was.
It was Smart. He was rubbing up on Smart on a screen, and he messed up his thigh.
Yeah, and just like watching the game, it's just like I'm watching LeBron run full speed everywhere and watching these players. Like, there's no real – like, I get it. You're in transition because you have a new coach, and you want to be like, oh, we're better and different. But there was no reason they should have gotten that point. And, again, it comes down to hero ball. And, okay, Avery Bradley hit the one in the corner. Now he's a hero. But – you know, more times than not, it just would have been banked off the edge and nobody would have noticed. And it's like, well, why'd you go for three and you could have just tied it up? And
well, it was also because the Cavs were coming off of a loss on the road against the Hornets. So there was two losses in a row under Tyronn Lue. And you know how that goes. The doomsayers say, oh, look at this. They're already falling apart with their new coach and blah, blah, blah. But they bounced back with a win against my shitty team. It's funny. They played the Celtics at home and then they followed them right up with my team. You know, so clearly your team is doing better than mine.
Well, they're just overachieving as they have been, and that's sort of been their mantra, you know, especially with, you know, 5'9" Isaiah Thomas going to the All-Star break and all. The team really, just on paper, has no right to be doing anything, and the fact that they're, you know, battling for home court in the playoffs is, like, crazy.
Yeah, usually you and I have to force the issue so that we can talk about the Pelicans and the Celtics, but I think in this case we actually do have a little thing to talk about, and that's the rumor that popped up about the Celtics trying to get a trade done or discuss, you know, like initial discussions of a trade for Dwight Howard. And then a lot of this comes back to the prevailing notion that Danny Ainge, the GM of the Boston Celtics, is a stargazer. He always wants to try to catch a big name because he knows. I don't know if it's because he had so much success when he got Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett in 2007, or, you know, but it's also come back to bite him, like when he signed Shaquille O'Neal and traded away Kendrick Perkins. But your thoughts on the idea that Dwight Howard could, I mean, I don't think he's going to go to Boston anyway. I think it was just an initial discussion that got leaked so that Danny Ainge could get the word out there that they are willing to make a deal for somebody. But what do you think about the idea of a star player coming
in? Depending upon who you hear it from. Some people are like, oh, they're just gauging interest. And other people said, yeah, it was the Rockets are the ones who were calling around.
Well, he's an expiring deal, so it does make sense if he opts out.
Oh, he's going to opt out. And yeah, the only thing about it is when he opts out, he's going to be making, what, $35 million when he's 35 and, oh, completely broken down as he's starting to get there now. And, mm-hmm. you know, he'll be on the Tim Duncan rest.
He's had some fantastic games with the Rockets, though. He had that one against the Clippers where he had, like, what, 26 rebounds?
Well, yeah, he's still a beast when he wants to be. It's just now, well, now you can't be a beast on back-to-back days. And then mm-hmm. it'll become to, well, now you can't be a beast on 2 out of 3 days, and then, you know, it just gets less and less and less and less. Well, but the, yeah, you need to make a trade for some name, because outside of you know, Greg Monroe going to Milwaukee for, you know, no reason, and now, you know, Milwaukee's looking to get rid of him because he doesn't fit. Everybody's wanting to play with other big names. So if you can't get one big name, you're not going to get two, and that's, you know, you see that's the problem. What's hindering other teams? Either you're on a youth movement where everybody's the same age and doesn't know any better, or you have to get a star to get other stars.
Yeah, and the thing for Ainge is that I don't think he wants to do what, you know, his assistant GM for a while, McDonough, did with Phoenix, where he has a nice team. They built it over time. They made a couple of signings, but not big ones, a couple of small ones, and they were turning in some wins when they weren't expecting it. And then all of a sudden, you know, Robert Sarver decides, okay, we need to start getting serious. And then, you know, the GM freaks out. He makes a couple of panic moves, and then he trades Goran Dragic and Isaiah Thomas. And now, you know, Jeff Hornacek is gone in Phoenix, which didn't shock anybody at this point, you know, with the way the season was going along, how bad they were doing, and also the fact that they got rid of his top assistants. You know, the new interim coach now is Earl Watson. I never thought in a million years, you know, they've had two guys that I never thought would become head coaches of the NBA. One is Earl Watson. The other one was Lindsey Hunter. Remember when Lindsey Hunter took over from Calvin Gentry?
You know what? I'm gonna change my mind. I am shocked by this firing.
Oh, really?
Because you lose your two top best players. How do you expect to compete anyways? You're angry. You're getting blown out. The players don't respond to you. You trade away your two best guys, and then your new two best guys are out. So you're relying on Archie Goodwin and Devin Booker to run your offense, and those are the only two. You know, the two guards are the only two that really score points in that system.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting anything from Morris. You're not getting anything from Len. You're not getting anything from Chandler.
Yeah, so you're getting some scoring from T.J. Warren, but it's minimal, you know.
Yeah, you're not. You know, your majority comes from your backcourt there, and if your backcourt is both out, how do you expect to compete? That doesn't make sense. Well, they don't respond to the coach. Well, yeah, because you're playing Archie Goodwin, who was in the D League starting the season, or, you know, at the end of the end of the end of the bench,
and Devin Booker, who's had good, you know, shooting percentage. You know, he's in the 3-point shooting contest. He's the youngest participant of all time for that contest. But he should not be in that position as a rookie. Even he should not be in that position where he has to play in that game.
And the problem is, it makes it worse now that Devin Booker is starting to show that he can do something, because you just mentioned you got rid of Dragic and Isaiah Thomas, and then you double down by doing the exact same thing by drafting another guard and then signing Brandon Knight to another huge deal. So you just replaced your two-guard system that didn't really work with the same two-guard system with just different names.
What does this whole stretch say about Brandon Knight? Do you think it's just too much to say, you see, he couldn't do it on his own, and in that Jason Kidd just brought him along really well in Milwaukee and he bailed too early?
I don't think it was that. I just think you can't play Bledsoe and another player exactly like Bledsoe together. I don't think it's anything on Knight. It's just you can't have two of the same player. Mm-hmm. That's just, and you know, it's there's no differential. It's one and one A. There's no difference.
As we get to the trade deadline, do you see any kind of, you know, final blow it up here with the Suns? Do you see anybody getting moved out? I mean, one that's obvious is Markieff Morris. Now, we did see Markieff, so lo and behold, have an actual good game after Hornacek was fired, but that's no shock. Every player does that when they get a new coach because they want to impress them. But when it comes to Markieff, I think he's gone. Do you see anybody else being moved here? Do you see a total explosion?
He's the only
explosion?
One that has value. Oh, he had a great game when the coach got fired. Yeah, because the other coach wasn't playing him, and he was getting 10 minutes and then pulled after one mistake. So, oh, well, now he has 30 minutes. Now he's doing good again. Oh, who knew? Nobody else has value. Nobody's taking Tyson Chandler in his contract. Maybe somebody might take Brandon Knight if, you know, you could sort of lowball an offer and give a bad contract in return. I don't know who, but
I'll say this. If Greg Monroe can get moved after less than a year into signing that deal, I'm sure they could try to move Brandon Knight in Phoenix.
Well, Monroe is good. He just doesn't fit there. Phoenix has nothing. Brandon Knight you know, he would help like a Brooklyn team or a team like even, I would say, your Hornets better than Drew Holiday in his 25 minutes.
Anything can help that Brooklyn team right now. Yeah, they don't even have a general manager. They just started interviewing for GMs.
And, you know, going on to them, they're not as bad as the situation as everyone seems to lend them to be. They will have $40 million to spend.
As crazy as this sounds, I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's injury actually hurt them a lot.
I think nobody expected him to be as good as he was.
He's not – they couldn't – I think people were shocked at how good he was intangibly, where he was able to do steals and be a junk, you know, a three and not a three and D guy because he's not a shooter yet, but you know, more of a help guy, you know, because sometimes as a rookie, all you want, like that's why Patrick Beverley was really valuable for the Houston Rockets for those first couple of years, because they needed a guy that would do the dirty work, because they don't want James Harden to pick up fouls and they don't want James Harden to get double teamed by the other guy's really physical defender and take a lot of unnecessary hits. Let Patrick Beverley be that guy.
Well, the difference between, you know, Patrick Beverley and, you know, don't forget, all these freshmen were all the heroes at college. They're all one and dones. They're all super. They're all, I'm going to play the hero ball. Even somebody like, you know, Hollis Jefferson can't shoot. Oh, he still hit a game-winning three here or there in college. So they think, oh, I'm still the man. Nobody wants to do that. Whereas Beverley, don't forget, he got kicked out of Missouri and had to go to the Russian League for the year. So he knows, like, look, if I need to be in the NBA – this is what I need to do. Same thing with Gerald Green. It's, you know, bouncing around super early gives you that, you know what, maybe I don't want to sit here in this, you know, country waiting for my check to check.
It's
and hoping
the value of the second chance, like we always talk about.
Yes. Okay. And these, you know, kids, some of them just don't have it yet because they still think they're the best thing ever. And it's like, well, okay.
Well, you don't want a Johnny Manziel situation where you give a guy a second chance and he didn't even deserve the first chance. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to overinflate the value of a player just because he has certain potential that you had seen. You know, like Kwame Brown's a great example of this, where he bounced around not because he was good, but because of the potential that people thought they saw in him. You know?
Well, yeah, and then just the attitude eventually will kill you, as you see with just many things, you know, like... like Eddie Curry, you're just going to be lazy and, well, you're 7 foot and you're going to do something? Nope, so.
Yeah, Noah Vonleh, an example in Portland. There's a couple of other ones that we could blurt out that are, that
you know, just like notion. Michael Beasley. You have all the talent in the world, you just don't really want to use it. You're just, you want to live the lifestyle, you want to be, you know, having the fancy, you know, private charter jets and your fancy five-star meals and your lavish and be like, you just don't want to put the work in.
And unfortunately for Phoenix, I don't think they're in 70. Well, you know what? The 76ers are actually winning some games, so maybe they're pretty. Maybe the Suns are pretty close to their territory. But I don't want to say that the Suns are at the level of what Brooklyn is and what Philadelphia is. Those teams are just hot garbage. But the Suns are in a situation where they're playing a lot of these guys, these young players, these rookies, that are just not in a position to be able to thrive or have the leadership in place or, you know, healthy enough healthy players to be the leader and to show them how to win. Now you get rid of the coach. Who do you blame here? I mean, is there really a blame game to be had here? Is it Hornacek? Is it Markieff Morris, who a lot of people have isolated here?
It's McDonough for someone else. You trade Morris, let's say, for a first rounder. Who do you have in the front court in that team, period? You have Alex Len and Chandler who can't do anything. Neither of them can even play like 25 minutes either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Philly has prospects. Brooklyn has cap space. Phoenix doesn't have either of those.
Mm-hmm. The problem with Brooklyn is that they're getting the cap space now, but they don't have the draft picks. That's the problem. The future was killed before they could even get it back.
They don't have the draft picks, but at the same time, as we know, A, you could buy any second-round pick, and B, look at all these kids who are just falling to the second round and out of the second round, and then still doing something. Mm-hmm. Every team has somebody like, you know, New Orleans has your
Bryce Dejon Jones.
Yeah, where he just out of nowhere comes in nothing. San Antonio is known for just getting people completely undrafted.
Jonathan Simmons, yeah.
To do stuff. And just They're out of nowhere. So you can get cheap players that just fall through the cracks. It's, you know, it just requires smart, you know, shopping, not, you know, bidding against yourself for Thaddeus Young, who still has tremendous value. If they want to flip him, he will get a premium. Not so much Lopez, only because of the injury concerns, but...
But you're saying in Phoenix, they don't really have either of these situations.
Who can you flip? You going to get rid of Eric Bledsoe? I don't think so with that injury. Okay, what about Knight? Well, he's sort of a safer gamble.
The good thing about Bledsoe, if you were a suitor, is that he's going to be next year in year three of his contract. So, you know, it's a little bit more... It's a little bit more reasonable to take him on. Whereas, you know... Now, there are some contracts that are so awful, like David Lee, Joe Johnson, Eric Gordon, where they're so bad, Adam, I almost called you Andrew, that you cannot even think about taking on that last percentage of that year's salary. That's how bad it is. Like, literally, you can't even move. Danny Ainge can't even move David Lee if he wanted to. He's probably going to have to buy him out. The same thing will probably have to happen with New Orleans and Eric Gordon. If we get past the trade deadline, they can't move him. And the other one that I mentioned is Joe Johnson. That's very likely. I don't think Johnson's going to be in Brooklyn by the end of the season.
Well, the problem was those used to be the three best contracts in the league until the league just said cap space is now irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And everybody has a max deal now. So, you know, okay, we got $20 million Joe Johnson. That's going to be an expiring deal. You imagine, like, let's say Phoenix wanted to blow their team up. They could have shipped out Knight, Len, and probably Booker for the expiring Joe Johnson.
Yeah, and this is going into, you know, a storyline that's going to reverberate all the way into the next summer. But the thing is, a lot of people say, well, you know, they have the cap room now going forward so that they can take on some of these contracts if they feel like they need a Joe Johnson or an Eric Gordon can really help them out. But here's the truth. A lot of these teams are already looking into the summer, and they know how much cap space they need to clear so that they could try to get a lot of these big names when a lot of these contracts are up. And I don't think these players like Gordon, Johnson, David Lee, they're just not in the cards. So now you're thinking, now all of a sudden you get this random idea. Hey, how about we bring in David Lee because our starting power forward got injured? Well, you're going to have to cut somebody, or you're going to have to take on another $5 million in cap space, you know, for the remaining, you know, 3 or 4 months of retaining that contract before it expires in July.
Yeah, they're really just expensive rentals, and you know, I don't see anyone really lining up on the door, knocking the doors down to sign Eric Gordon. Is he a good shooter? Would he help some team for the playoffs? Yeah, but
I'm only isolating those three players. There's quite a few others, but those three in particular have very expensive, near max level deals on the old scale, and their contracts are all going to be up at the end of this season.
Yeah, and they're not going to. They might not even make what they made then. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously in the case of Johnson, but I don't see someone going to Eric Gordon saying we'll give you $13 million, we'll give you 3 years $40 million. I don't see that happening.
Oh, the Pelicans are, I mean, we're looking at their record. They had a homestand, a long homestand, but they just dropped too many games down the stretch. They had a really embarrassing loss to the Lakers where Kobe Bryant suddenly found the fountain of youth for a week, where he had 38 points against the Wolves, and then he played really well against the Pelicans on Thursday night on TNT on the second half of a doubleheader. And at this point, let me just stare at their standings here, because it ain't pretty for the Pels. As we load it here, they're at 18-32. They're 28 games back of the number one spot. So I don't think they're going to catch that. But they're 6 games back of that last spot, which is it's going to be 7 games behind the Utah Jazz. So are we at a point with the Pels where it's time to start making some moves?
Well, there's another team. They have your team, you know. Sorry, what future does your team have?
They have Anthony Davis.
You have Anthony Davis and literally nobody else around him.
Yeah.
The only player with value, Ryan Anderson, you're hoping somebody will trade you something good for him because You know you can't re-sign him.
He had that big game against the Kings, so a lot of rumors popped up, well, they might move him for Rudy Gay, and Anderson's from California, so it'd be a good fit there. But now we've heard all the talk that there's, because of the losing streak that they're on, that George Karl might get fired after the All-Star break. Now, does that shock you at all?
Yeah, that's just more sad, and that's just, you know, the owner not getting really understanding anything if you're going to have five coaches in 6 years.
I simply think that DeMarcus Cousins just never wanted George Karl to coach him.
No, he didn't. And
he was against it from the start.
He was, and like we said, that team is just mishmashed of parts. Mm-hmm. None of them fit together. None of them really, you know, it's just like if you had to do like a fantasy draft and every, you know, the team before you kept picking the guy you wanted. Well, I need a small forward. Okay, Rudy Gay. Well, I need a, you know, okay, you know, Cousins was your first pick, and then you get Gay, and then, oh, I guess I need Rondo, but Rondo can't really play with anybody else, and there's no shooter on the team, and...
And they kind of botched their rookies, you know, with that McLemore, Stauskas. Willie Cauley-Stein is coming along.
He's good at developing. Everyone's happy with him because he'll give you what he'll give you, but... He's not sucking like their last picks.
Yeah, Bellinelli's worked out well for them. It seemed like they were kind of finding their footing there, and then they had a stretch where I believe they lost, what, 6 of 7? During that stretch, I don't know if you saw that, but DeMarcus Cousins had a massive 56-point game against the Charlotte Hornets, but they lost in overtime.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they just, that's it. You have one player. And nobody else is doing anything around him.
Do you think Cousins, Boogie, is at a point where he can be a kind of player where you're willing to dump coach after coach for, where you're willing to build everything around him despite his mercurial nature?
Well, I think we could have a whole complete episode on that because I just keep going back and forth. It's like, well, do you just dump him and then start rebuilding your team as a team? Or do you just keep dumping everything around him and hoping something will stick?
I wonder if Vlade Divac sees what's going on in Portland, where they let LaMarcus Aldridge leave. Everyone else, they either traded or they let walk in free agency. They built everything around one player, Damian Lillard. They didn't fire the coach. Terry Stotts was a good fit for Lillard because he's an up-tempo coach, and, you know, Lillard's a guard, and, you know, they like to... pushing the tempo helps up the scoring, you know, when you run a lot of, you know, ball screen offense like they do. And so they watch Damian Lillard, who I believe was snubbed out of the All-Star game personally, having a really good year. Portland is still in the thick of it, even though nobody gave him a chance, including you and me. And maybe Vlade is thinking, if I can just find the right coach for Boogie Cousins, I can make this work.
Yeah, but... I don't. You need other people besides Cousins, and Gay isn't it. And Gay has been good, and Gay has been nice. It's just, I don't know what that team needs because the team is just beyond. Like, this was the first year they'd sort of made trades to sort of get some sort of.
They were serious. It was the first year where they were legitimately serious to get better.
Yeah, and they were. They did get better until sort of just the wheels fell off, and they. You know, injuries, once Cousins got injured those few games. And
yeah, and you heard the rumors they like Mike Malone. But, you know, that's not going to happen. Malone's in Denver. That bridge has been burnt. So.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, at some point, you have, is Cousins the problem? Is all the talent in the world, you know, going to be squandered on him, you know, getting it?
He is the most temperamental player in the NBA. Let's be honest here. He, you know, the reason why he's the most temperamental player and it's not like just a smaller player who's just got a fiery personality or somebody like that is that, you know, the weight of expectations on Boogie because of his potential, and there's that word again, it's so great and the responsibilities that he can take on are so great that I think it causes more stress, you know, and we're getting into psychology, I guess, a little bit here, but I guess it creates more stress the heavier the burden is as a star player, and maybe Boogie is just not equipped to handle it from an emotional standpoint. You know, maybe the reason why he's so temperamental is because he is asked to do more and he's simply not in an emotional place where he can handle that.
Yeah, that's, you know, that also requires, you know, getting veterans in and getting leadership and having some sort of locker room culture. And, you know, as we've seen, there hasn't been one. And, you know, at what point does he start breaking down? Because he's you know...
He's physical. Yeah.
He is physical, and you're squandering his prime years, you know, just constantly losing. So, you know, obviously, okay, the Maloofs were cheap and, you know, didn't want to put any salary around him. And, you know, this was an attempt, but, you know, what do you have? You know, you got two more years of Cousins under contract, but what's going to happen when, you know, he needs to re-sign and now you're going to have to pay him $40 million a year? And, you know, he's 26 now.
He'll be 26 in August.
Yes. Okay. He's 25.
Having career high in points, and he's at 11 rebounds a game, which is a little less than last year, but still at an elite level for a big man.
Yeah. So he's year six, entering your prime. You got four more years of your prime left, and you put, you know, people like Darren Collison around him, and, you know, just nothing special. So I don't know whether it was just a bad attempt of let's try to get players who can score around you and mismatch, but there's nobody looks like they can play as a team. You just watch them.
Does George Karl deserve to be fired?
Well, he deserves better than that team.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a point where even if you have a really bad team like Jeff Hornacek, you got to do something with it. And if you can't do something with it, then you have to take some. The only thing that bothers me about the Jeff Hornacek stuff, where people are just like, "Oh, this poor guy," is that you are the head coach. You are responsible at the end of the day. Are you in a no-win situation? Possibly, but you still have to shoulder some of that responsibility. Am I right?
I think it's just more of effort. Like, you know, okay, you get blown out, but, you know, when it looks like you get blown out and you're like, okay, we give up, you know, everyone else can just keep shooting. We're going home. Mm-hmm. We'll just wait till the clock comes out. You know, would Carl benefit from assistant coaching changes? Maybe, you know, get some assistance that the team might like. I don't know. But is he the problem? I don't know, because they started off pretty hot with him.
And the offense is still really good. I think they're third in the league in scoring. You know, defensively, George Karl seems to me have always had problems, you know.
Well, he's always probably never had a, you know, a true center like Cousins.
Yeah.
Anywhere. But, you know, does he deserve better? Yeah. Should, you know, is it a bad fit? And should he probably be, you know, somewhere else? Yeah. But at the same time, you know, would he keep him on as an advisor role? I don't know, but at some point it's got to be his Cousins the problem.
Let's talk a little bit about the standings here as we go forward. We're at a point in the Eastern Conference where it's safe to say that the top team there in the East is going to continue to be Cleveland. We saw a little bit of movement with the Chicago Bulls, but it didn't seem to last, huh?
That team just fell apart completely.
Everybody's questioning their toughness. They've dropped a couple of games, one to Minnesota. I saw them lose another game to, I want to say it was the Clippers, huh? Where they just did not really look that good.
You know,
Jimmy Butler got an injury. Hopefully he's okay with that knee injury that he got.
Mitch Roddick has looked completely lost.
Well, he's hurt. Hoiberg. I think he got hurt.
Before he got injured and before he's out, he just looked completely everything where, you know, oh, could be a rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. He's dominant. He has lost everything he had.
You know, with the Pacers at 27-24, right behind Chicago, I don't think they're falling apart. I just think it's that change in identity and having trouble trying to stabilize it. Now, I think they found something there with Miles Turner.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, we do our part one of the small forward rankings. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, Indiana puts Turner at the four and moves George back to the three. Like, come on. No, no.
So we're going to have to do a top 11 for the next
time. No, our rankings are set. I'm sorry. You can't get... No.
Sorry, CJ Miles. You're not getting out of this one.
You know, George is a four. He's a power four. Oh, wait. He's getting beat up? Oh, maybe we should move him back to the three. Yeah.
Do you like Indiana going with the four out, one in? with Miles there? Because I think the question that Vogel had, and it was an appropriate question, is I don't think this rookie can handle it inside on his own. But here's the thing. In the NBA, everyone's playing that way now, Adam. He can handle it because you have to.
And you also have Ian Mahimi, who's really sort of resurrected himself. As we mentioned in our previews, if the Pacers were going to see it, he'd have to be most improved.
Yeah.
And he's really has.
On the defensive side, he's been a great help for them.
Yeah. So you get that, and you just sort of have an anchor, and Turner can make mistakes, sort of learn. But if you have, if you have Paul George still sort of roaming around you, it's a good thing to have. But no, the Bulls are, they have enough talent to still make, the top eight. It's just they're just sort of walking wounded. And then Hoiberg, I just hasn't been a success.
Well, it's funny, too, because you got three teams from the same division. Now, we know that the division standings aren't paramount anyway with the playoff standings anyway. So not too many people debated. I don't think a lot of people even remember who are in what divisions anymore because of this. But you got three Central Division teams in a row there. You got the Bulls, the Pacers, and then you got the Pistons, who've been really up and down. Did you see that game where Andre Drummond took over, 34 free throws? Or
yeah, he set the record.
It was 40, maybe?
Yeah, it was just disgusting.
Oh, it was awful. The Hacka. I guess we can call it Hacka, because I the thing is, a lot of people say, well, it's just two players, it's just Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan. No, well, no, it's not. There's Andre Drummond, there's Clint Capella. Every team has a guy on the court, usually a big man, who is one of the lowest percentage free throw shooters on that team by a wide margin. Even Golden State has one with Andre Iguodala. So everybody does Hacka, and it has gotten to a point where aesthetically it is so ugly to watch. I don't know if I've ever even gotten your opinion on this. Are we at a point where we need to make a change here with the Hacka strategies?
Well, yes and no, as that's my usual response. I'm not against the Hacka strategy because you put the guy on the court and make the free throws. However, you have players now fouling the guy trying to inbound the ball. They're making a free throw and just jumping on somebody who's not part of the play. That's not part of basketball. Okay, you pass it in.
I'll tell you why they do that. Because when the ball is up in the air, it's a live ball. But if you're trying to inbound it and you foul them, that's an intentional foul. That's free throws in the ball, which doesn't help anybody. So they figured out that if we foul them immediately after the ball is let go, it's a live ball foul.
Yeah, I just mean loopholes like that. That part is really, really unnecessary, and that's the part that ruins it. It's, okay, you have it, let's hack them, let's foul them, we get it. Yeah, okay. That's, I get that's part of us, but the parts that aren't even close to it, and the game's already stopped, and then you're going to foul again just to stop the game again. Mm-hmm. There's no real reason for it. If, your team's down, why not just hit some baskets as opposed to slowing it down and everybody getting angry?
And it is really slow. It is really sad watching these players do pony rides on these centers to try to get fouls. It makes funny vines every now and then, but there is a point where it's like, okay, come on, let's just play some fucking basketball here,
So maybe, something like the college, not the college rule, how they had it where, okay, 7 is a 1-1, then 10 is 2-2. Maybe it's just be like, all right, if you foul a team like 13 times in a quarter, look, eventually it's going to have to start being 3 free throws and then, then the ball and.
Well, what do you think the solution is here? Because Adam Silver already made quotes where it seems like he might be changing his mind, because let's be honest, the growing public is starting to get the notion that there needs to be a change made because it's just become a widespread problem. And Adam Silver is probably going to look into it with the rules committee in the offseason after this season is over. But what's the solution here? Is it simply that an away from the ball foul can be shot by any player on the team for free throws? Or do you now do it for in the last 10 minutes instead of the last 2 minutes of every quarter?
Well, for one, Silver is smart. He understands that if nobody's watching our game, then nobody cares about the game. Mm-hmm. It's not like the NFL where we're bigger than everything. You will watch us. It's just people turn off the TV. You've now lost your huge TV contract that you fought so hard to get. I wouldn't, It's really hard to say what they would do, because I can agree to so many things, like, you know, how the NFL had that, you know, that 10-second runoff if you do something, or I forget, you know, what exactly it is, or you could choose to take the ball in again, or something, but, or just, you know, again, one bit, just call it more liberally. If it's if they are intentional fouls, you know, jumping on a center's back as the free throw is going, that is an intentional foul if you're just not even trying.
I think there's two solutions here, and I think one is a little harsh, and I think it would be kind of like I think it would be contradictory to the actual rule. But if you just started calling those fouls flagrant fouls, but they're not flagrant in terms of excessive nature. It's just the fact that you're fouling, you're clearly committing a foul, not because you're trying.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, intentional foul.
But here's the problem though with that. A lot of people foul any player on the court so that they can save themselves time to try to close the lead. So maybe you're not able to do that. So if you can't do that, then the other thing you can do is just have any shooter on that team allowed to shoot the free throw on an intentional foul, not the center who's fouled.
No, because you can have the center, then the center can get the, you know, after a certain amount, you get the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes a technical foul.
Okay, so free throws in the ball.
Free throws in the ball, then... You know, for the loophole ones, for the, you know, the ones where you're going to have, okay, I get it, you're going to have that, but, and then that's why, you know, okay, have all your guys start fouling out, and then you have the end of the game where you're relying on, you know, just.
It would almost be more awkward, though, because if you do them as technicals, then the player would have to shoot the free throws by himself, which would probably put even more pressure on a player who's got very shaky nature at the free throw line. You know what I'm
saying?
Yeah,
but if you miss them, it doesn't matter because you're getting the ball back. And they have to do it all over again, and then their entire...
Yeah, but doesn't that kind of stop play in a way, too? But then again...
It'll stop play, but it'll stop them from doing it because, well, you don't get the ball back.
You think coaches really like to do it? I know some coaches are like, you know, I hate this rule, but I do take it, but I have to take advantage of it. Do you think some coaches go into this saying, okay, we need this hacker strategy just in case of an emergency?
Well, you know, logic says it works better if you're ahead, because that's how you just preserve your lead. You kill all momentum the other team has by coming back. You just sort of salt them down by have them, you know, their worst guy missing three throws. It's something built with an advantage, but it's one of those things. Well, you know, I don't like it. It's not part of basketball. I'm not drawing up X's and O's, which is what, you know, I'm meant to do. But well, if it's there, I'm going to use it.
Let's talk about the Toronto Raptors for just a second. They're at the 2 spot here at the Eastern Conference. The top spot's in Cleveland. I don't think anyone's going to shake them. But you've got Toronto here, and they're 2 games back at 34-16. Right behind them is the Hawks. But the Hawks and the Celtics, your Celtics, they're 5 games back of Toronto. Are we at a point here where we can say that the Toronto Raptors have clearly separated themselves in that 2 spot, and they're likely going to play the 7 seed?
Yeah, but does that really mean anything? Does that scare anybody saying Toronto's a number 2? Because
I'll say this. A 2 seed, I just can't see a 2 seed losing in the first round. So I think that all but guarantees that Toronto will go to the next round.
Yeah, but, you know, right now, look who's at the bottom half of that group. You have Miami, Chicago, Indiana, Detroit, Charlotte, and then the Wizards.
I'm with you now as the months have gone along. I think Miami's a dangerous team regardless of their record. You've got
exactly.
The shooter, you got the Chris Bosh who's having the, you know, very good shooting year. Dwayne Wade looks good. Hassan Whiteside looks really good. They're getting a lot of good play out of Justice Winslow. I just think, and Goran Dragic, of course, has picked up steam. I just think that's a really nice team that they have.
And they're getting that veterans mentality of, well, let's just save it to the end of the season because they learned last year.
And they play defense. That's the biggest part, too. They're one of the only teams in the East that can keep teams to under about 97 points a game.
Well, yeah, because you have Whiteside, who's just one-man defensive team, just getting 10 blocks a game, which is crazy.
Well, that would be the buzz. There would be a buzz factor there, especially if Miami wound up playing Cleveland because of the, you know, obviously the storylines there with Wade and Bosh and James and blah, blah, blah. But for Toronto's sake, what has gotten them to this point where we can, because, you know, at the All-Star break last year, you know, now they're going to be at their home court, you know, with DeRozan and Lowry in the All-Star game, you know, so they're going to be able to kind of celebrate a little bit as Toronto fans, we the North. But for Toronto last year, they were kind of in a position where they were kind of getting a little skittish at this point in the All-Star break. What's different this year? Why are they at a point where they've really stabilized themselves as a perennial playoff team?
Well, last year they started off like what, crazy hot? They were like 15-2.
Yeah, the first month and a half, they were hot.
And then they just played 500 ball the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you know, they're going to sort of falter because they don't have anybody really at the three or four beyond Biombo. You know, James Johnson
is Valanciunas, but he's still taking a while.
He's growing and he's getting better, but you have, like, if you're going to rely on James Johnson and Patrick Patterson to give you your depth and give you some sort of playoff push from your bench, that's not exactly a good sign. And, okay, Terrence Ross, he might show up, he might not, who knows. And you're just waiting for another Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan meltdown like they sort of have. So, yeah, it's great they didn't. This team's different because now they play defense, and let's get rid of the shooters like Lou Williams, who doesn't play defense, and let's bring in, you know, Biombo, who doesn't know how to shoot but can rebound. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good.
And let's bring in Damari Carroll, you know, to be kind of like that, you know, as we've always said, junkyard dog there.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he's out for the year, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what sort of kills them is now their depth isn't there. And, you know, you spent your depth getting developmental people like Caboclo and Lucas Najera, who aren't, you know, going to provide anything for that team.
The one surprise was the team that ended the 7-game winning streak, and that was Denver. I don't know if that was some kind of strange revenge against Masai Ujiri. I don't know what that was, but I guess they just had an off night against Gallinari and those guys.
Yeah, that's just one of the things. I think they sort of like, oh, well, they're a nothing team.
And I mean, the Warriors lost to the Nuggets, too.
Yeah, they're sort of just that letdown game, and Denver always plays hard. They're the team, you know, they're the teams that they don't have the talent, but they will put the effort in every night. Another surprise for just quickly on Toronto before we wrap them up.
Yeah.
Corey Joseph. He's a
dependable backup point guard.
I thought that was a horrible signing, and they paid tons of money for really just a San Antonio system player. It's like, well, he's Canadian. We need to get him because he's Canadian. But he actually shows he can do something.
Mm-hmm. And they protected their home court really well in Toronto. I don't think it's like a house of horrors for people. But, I mean, when DeRozan gets going and Kyle Lowry. And by the way, I don't know if you listen to them in interviews, but they're hilarious together. It's obvious that Lowry and DeRozan have really, really good rapport as teammates, which is a good thing. When you have two all-star players or all-star caliber players that can have that kind of a relationship or a friendship and trust factor, that's good. You know, we saw it in Miami between Wade and James, and they won titles with it. You know, it's good to have that, even though it's not the most important thing in the world. It's just that little extra intangible that you can use in case Toronto gets into a rut.
Yeah, and you know what? We're not seeing that Cleveland. Where's the old days of LeBron doing little pictures?
No, but LeBron
and
LeBron did
skits.
Put Kevin Love in an Instagram photo the other day.
You know,
it was the first time ever that Kevin Love was in one of LeBron's Instagram photos. So there's progress there.
You know, it's just funny. That's all.
Well, you saw Kevin Love photoshopped himself when he wasn't invited in his Instagram photo. The other, it all started last year when there was like a photo in an airliner's or like an airplane, and Kevin Love wasn't in the photo, and he had said something about it, I think. And LeBron said something, tweeted something that was a little bit thinly veiled, but they knew he was calling out Love. And this was before Love was a free agent, you know? And he re-signed anyway because they said that they had hashed it out and they had sat in the pool and all that stuff. And I don't know what kind of relationship they have. It's very, very strange.
Yeah, it doesn't. It never seemed good, and it still doesn't seem good. And the more we watch them play together, the more we see they can't play together.
I think it's simple. I think that they just can't have LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love all coexist with getting the same amount of offensive touches. I think when Kyrie was out and Love was getting all the touches, everything was hunky-dory. I just think – I'm not saying Kyrie is the problem because he was the last one to kind of get inserted back into the lineup, and he took away a lot of the offensive touches for Love, but I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and the touches you are getting are three-pointers, and you're not protecting the rim, and you can't really play defense.
Which is exactly what Kyrie Irving does.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see with this nice break we have.
Can you believe we've gone this long and not talked about the Golden State Warriors?
Let's just make it a whole episode.
Are you that sick of the Golden State Warriors? They just had that really entertaining. Now it was on ESPN because ABC was doing what I think it was the Republican debate. I guess they just didn't want to compete with NFL honors, you know, ceremony. So they moved the Saturday night primetime game that they just started to ESPN, and it was Golden State and Oklahoma City at Oracle, you know, in the Bay Area, you know, the night before the Super Bowl. And fantastic game. The Golden State won a high scoring affair, which is not a surprise because those were the two highest scoring offenses in the league. You know, Durant went for 40 and they lost anyway. But the thing is with Golden State, I don't want to say too much yet because it's. I feel like, you know, Curry's had the great 50-point game against the Wizards where he made 11 threes, and now all people are talking about now is, will Curry ever break the single game 3-point shooting record, like for 3-pointers in a game? It's like, well, yeah, he is. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, he is, and you know, well, what if he goes 0-for-12? Well, then the team's gonna lose.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. What if he has a really bad shooting night in a pivotal playoff game?
If he has a bad shooting night or he twists his ankle and has to sit out a game, that just seems to be an L. Mm-hmm. That, as much as you like Harrison Barnes, I've
seen the Warriors without Curry in one game, and it was on the road when they played Dallas, and they got blown out badly.
Yeah, the team is just not – the team is his. As much as you could say, like, you know, Draymond Green's running around being Superman and doing all the garbage stuff and, you know, Thompson's hitting everything. But if Curry goes, that team goes.
What you thought about the scare against Philadelphia? Were you just laughing at it?
That was just a
bizarro world.
Pretty much. It's just one of those things, you know. And then it's like, wait a minute. They're the 76ers. We can put one good minute together.
Well, they found Barnes open for a three on the corner when Draymond was like kind of shuffling for the last possession. Curry actually gave up the tie. You know, they had the ball. He got stripped by Ish Smith, and Ish Smith goes in for a layup to tie the game.
Yeah. You know?
Let's actually go to the bottom of the Western Conference instead of the top, because the top is kind of uber predictable right now. Do you think we already talked about Sacramento? Do you think they're at a point with the standing? Let's look at the standings one more time here with the Western Conference, and we've got the Kings at 21-29. You know, not losing their last two games, and they're sitting behind the Utah Jazz by about four games, and they're sitting behind the Blazers by about three games. The Jazz and Blazers are only separated by one game for that last spot in the Western Conference. Would you say that it's too late for the Kings to try to recover from that, or you're not counting them out yet?
I want to say no, because any team could go on a five-game win streak, and then, you know, you're four games out, now you're two games out.
Do you see Dallas or Houston, either of those teams?
No, neither of those teams are good, but neither of those teams, you know, between Portland and Utah, and then another three, four games between the rest of the garbage.
And I'm not including Memphis, because I think Memphis has stabilized themselves. I think they've played a whole lot better in the last month of the season than I saw them in the last.
They've stabilized, but are they really better? They're just sort of.
They're not better, but they've gone back to what they do.
They are who they are, and they are, you know, they're on a hot streak now, but they're, you know, they still just look like a team like, okay, we can't blow it up, we can't rebuild. We don't really have a chance. We are the fifth team in a four-team lead in a four-team conference.
So you don't think it's strictly for the Northwest Division to battle out that eighth spot between Utah and Portland? You think that Sacramento still has a fighting chance?
Technically, they still have a chance. Let's say once they fire Carl and play under the new coach and
not a Lloyd Christmas chance like the Pelicans do though.
Pelicans are done. They just take the best offer for Ryan Anderson and get prospects. They have literally nobody outside of Davis. There's no young player on the team.
Yeah, and the Nuggets, and I can't give the Nuggets a chance. I think they're kind of already slipping the other way.
The Nuggets will be dangerous in 2 years.
Oh, for sure, but this year's not the year.
And they've done better, I think, than we expected them to.
Oh, yeah, for them to have 20 wins before the All-Star break is a shock. It's a legitimate shock for them to have more than 30 to if they finish with about 35 wins. That is like that's a great year for them. It is.
Yeah.
It's a
for a team that bottomed out and, you know, restarting when, you know, here you go, young guys, here's the keys. We don't care how low your PER is.
Yeah.
But
and that just goes to show not every season's a lost season. There are things to be learned, especially for younger a team with a lot of younger players. Like even Utah last year didn't make the playoffs. That was a valuable year for them to learn how to win.
You know? Yeah, but then the problem is you have Minnesota, which just has young talent and too big of a roster.
Yeah, they got on a really bad rut in January, didn't they?
You need to, same thing with Orlando. You can't have a 10, 11 player rotation. Mm-hmm. You needed to shorten up. You pick the players you want to develop, and you can't play everybody. And that's what Minnesota's trying to do, and it's just not working.
Let's talk a little bit about the schedule, and it's going to be a shorter one because we have the All-Star break that's going to stop after Friday. I think Thursday or Friday is when they stop it. On Monday the 8th, we've got here the Magic at the Hawks for a division rivalry game there. I don't really see much here. The Kings that we just talked about, they go to Cleveland to play the Cavaliers. The Bulls play the Hornets. The Raptors go to Detroit to play the Pistons. That's probably the most interesting game in that slate. Tuesday we have two TNT games because obviously they got the All-Star break coming up. They got the Spurs at Miami and they got the Rockets at Golden State. Any chances Golden State loses their first home game?
No, not to the Rockets.
Your Celtics play the Bucks, so you get to see Greg Monroe a little bit there. After that, we've got a pretty stacked day on Wednesday. You've got the Spurs and the Magic, the Clippers and the Celtics, the Hawks and the Bulls. You've got the Warriors going on the road against the Suns, the Hornets at Indiana against the Pistons, and Then you have on the 11th, you only have two games. You got the Wizards and the Bucks, and you got the Pelicans and the Thunder on TNT.
You know, you have lots of Houston this week on TV, which nobody really wants to see anymore because they're very mediocre.
They're mediocre, but they're still in the hunt because you got Harden, you got Howard, and they're in the playoff race.
And there's a lot, and the West has really fallen off as from their dominance.
I don't want to say falling off, but because the top of it is so good.
They became very top-heavy.
Very true. I agree with you completely there. But it's good because it kind of creates a little bit of parity between when you have those interconference games where you're not just saying, oh, yeah, the West is going to roll this Eastern Conference team because the Eastern Conference isn't that good. I think the Eastern Conference overall has definitely improved. And so when they go out to the West Coast and they play some of these Western Conference teams or the teams in the middle of the country and they play Western Conference teams, it's pretty competitive.
Yeah, and you know, again, for all the conspiracy theorists, if Golden State's so good, you know, why would you put them on at 10:30 every night where half the country can't see the end of the games?
Once we get removed from the All-Star break and or the All-Star game, what are we going to be talking about the most?
Trade deadline.
Anything from the All-Star game that you think might show up that people are going to be buzzing about? Maybe Zach LaVine trying to defend his slam dunk title. Steph Curry making a million threes again.
It'll just be wrapped up in a series of vines.
You don't like the little man, big man contest for the skills challenge?
That's just bizarre and weird. And
I think Anthony Davis is going to win the skills challenge.
I have no idea. It could be any of them.
You think
it's really just a complete bizarre, anyone can take it, I think.
I don't have the participants in front of me. I know for the little guys, one of them is CJ McCollum. And then for the big men, you've got Cousins, you got Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns. So three Kentucky guys. And then there's another big man who I'm already skipping on. But if you had to choose between a big man and a little man, because they're going to play each other in the finals, who would you take?
Oh, it's definitely the little man is going to win. It's just...
I think the big man's going to win.
He's going to beat the natural point guard in the...
Yeah, because the guards always don't take it seriously. Don't you? When they bounce it through that tire, you can tell sometimes that they're not focused. Especially
on
the second
or third show. But I think you get the... You're going to lose to the big, you know... You're going to have McCollum or somebody be like, yo, you just lost to Cousins, really?
Yeah.
you know, I think it's going to be, you will take it seriously just to beat. The contestants are, it's Beverly, Jordan Clarkson, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, CJ McCollum, Isaiah Thomas.
Ooh, and I might take that bet. Draymond might win it. So a little guy is going to win it after all.
If 6'7 is little these days.
Well, in today's NBA where we have like 6'6 point guards, I guess
6'6 point guards and 6'7 centers. Why not?
But that's going to be finished up this episode. I hope everybody enjoys the All-Star break. But we will be back for another episode next week. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reach. Take care, everybody. See you later.